Once again, your radios are set to the right spot, 1550 AM, good old-fashioned radio, and a signal that streams around the globe on our websites, GrecianEchoes.com and WNTN.com. I'm your host, Teddy Dimitriadis, joined this morning by the Professor Petro Van Vakar and our Consul General, Simeon Degos, in studio live, and we thank them both for joining us. Είπαμε πολλά στα αγγλικά, ας πούμε, και λίγα στα ελληνικά.
Να πούμε λοιπόν ότι σε αυτούς τους δύσκολους καιρούς και τις δύσκολες συνθήκες, τους καιρούς της αβεβαιότητας, η χώρα μας, η Ελλάδα μας είναι σε μια εξαιρετική σταθερή θέση, παράγοντας και προάγοντας ηρεμία και σταθερότητα σε μια πολύ ταραγμένη περιοχή. Αυτό δεν είναι κάτι που πρέπει να το θεωρούμε ούτε δεδομένο ούτε αυτονόητο. Έχουμε δει χώρες που πριν από λίγο καιρό πίστευαν ότι όλα είναι δεδομένα και σταθερά και βρέθηκαν στο μάτι του κυκλώνα. Το ότι η Ελλάδα είναι μία από τις πλέον σταθερές πολιτικά, οικονομικά, κοινωνικά χώρες στην περιοχή και θα έλεγα ευρύτερα στην Ευρωπαϊκή Ένωση, είναι ένα πολύ σημαντικό επίτευγμα. Οφείλεται πάνω απ' όλα στη δύναμη και στη σύνθεση του ελληνικού λαού και τις προσπάθειες που γίνανε. Και νομίζω ότι μέγιστη απόδειξη αυτού του σημαντικού ρόλου που επιτελεί η χώρα μας και αυτής της σημασίας που έχει είναι το γεγονός ότι πάρα πολλοί Ελληνοαμερικάνοι πλέον θέλουν να γίνουν μέρος της ελληνικής οικογένειας και επίσημα. Έχουμε 300-400% αύξηση σε αυτά τα αιτήματα αυτόν τον καιρό, το οποίο μας χαροποιεί ιδιαίτερα και μας δυσκολεύει λίγο στο κομμάτι το γραφειοκρατικό. Κάνουμε ό,τι μπορούμε να ανταποκριθούμε, αλλά το σημαντικό είναι ότι δείχνει την επιστροφή στις ρίζες και μια μεγάλη αξία που αποδίδουν πλέον στη χώρα μας, ότι δεν είναι πλέον, η εικόνα έχει αλλάξει οριστικά νομίζω και αμετάκλητα, γι' αυτό να πούμε σε αυτή, εκεί που πραγματικά θέλω να το πάω είναι ότι πρέπει να συνεχίσετε να επισκέπτε στην Ελλάδα, να επενδύετε στην Ελλάδα, να δυναμώνετε τις σχέσεις σας με την Ελλάδα, και ότι η χώρα μας έχει αποδείξει την αξία της. Όπως είπε ο κύριος Βαμβακάς, η Τρίτη Ελληνική Δημοκρατία έχει δείξει τη σταθερότητά της και τα αντανακλαστικά της και μπορούμε να είμαστε περήφανοι για τη σταθερότητά μας. Έτσι, Πέτρο.
Νομίζω ότι αυτό το τελευταίο, δηλαδή είμαστε στα κοντά 50 χρόνια τώρα στην Τρίτη Ελληνική Δημοκρατία. Δηλαδή αν βάλεις 50 χρόνια συνάμα στην όλη τη διάρκεια του νεοσύστατου του ελληνικού κράτους, δεν μπορείς να δεις 50 χρόνια με τέτοια σταθερότητα και με τεράστια προβλήματα. Δηλαδή δεν ήταν 50 χρόνια τα οποία πέρασαν έτσι. Ήταν 50 χρόνια που είδαμε την πτώση της Σοβιετικής Ένωσης, είδαμε 50 χρόνια μέσα στη διάρκεια την οποία είδαμε και οικονομικές και πολιτικές κρίσεις. Είδαμε μια σταθερότητα του πολιτικού συστήματος παρά τα σκαμπανεβάσματα. Δηλαδή είδαμε χώρες όπως η Πορτογαλία, η Ισπανία, η Ιταλία, οι οποίες πέρασαν τα ίδια κύματα, τις ίδιες τρικυμίες και ακόμα ψάχνονται. Δηλαδή στην Πορτογαλία είχαμε την αλλαγή του Πρωθυπουργού για το πρόβλημα το οποίο περνάει αυτή τη στιγμή. Έχουμε κυβέρνηση μειοψηφίας στην Ισπανία. Έχουμε κυβέρνηση, στην Ιταλία, η οποία είναι το πρώτο κόμμα, έχει ένα 23-24%. Έτσι, δηλαδή και στον Ευρωπαϊκό Νότο η Ελλάδα στέκεται λίγο καλύτερα. Το γεγονός είναι ότι η Ανατολική Μεσόγειο σαν περιοχή είναι μια περιοχή γεωπολιτικής αστάθειας, διότι δεν υπάρχει ένας ικανός παράγοντας, υπάρχουν πάρα πολλοί παράγοντες που δημιουργούν ένα τεράστιο πρόβλημα και εκεί της περιοχής και εξωγενείς. Δηλαδή και η Κίνα είναι εκεί και η Ινδία είναι εκεί και η Ρωσία είναι εκεί, η Αμερική, το Ηνωμένο Βασίλειο, η Γαλλία. Άρα έχεις μια περιοχή και μια λεκάνη της Ανατολικής Μεσογείου η οποία έχει τεράστια αστάθεια και νομίζω και το θέμα δεν είναι μόνο αυτή η πύλη της Ελλάδος προς την Ευρώπη, την οποία καλύπτεται με τα διαβατήρια και με τα υπόλοιπα άλλα, γιατί κακά τα ψέματα το ελληνικό διαβατήριο έχει μια άλλη ισχύ, αλλά είναι και το γεγονός ότι και η διασπορά νομίζω μπορεί να παίξει ένα ρόλο όσο αφορά,
καθοριστικό.
Πάνω σε αυτό. Δηλαδή είναι και το από την άλλη μεριά, ναι, η πύλη προς την Ελλάδα, αλλά και μια οργανωμένη πύλη της Ελλάδος προς τη διασπορά, δηλαδή η διασπορά η οποία μετέχει και στο πολιτικό πλαίσιο τώρα με την ψήφο, αλλά και η διασπορά μέσα σε ένα πλαίσιο εξωτερικής πολιτικής. Δηλαδή η Ελλάδα θα μπορέσει να χρησιμοποιήσει αυτό το μεγάλο παίχτη εκτός, δηλαδή τον 12ο παίχτη, ξέρω εγώ, στο γήπεδο, αν παίζουμε ποδόσφαιρο, ή τον 6ο παίχτη στο μπάσκετ, δηλαδή, ο οποίος λέγεται η διασπορά. Και νομίζω και τα προξενία και οι προξενικές αρχές παίζουν μεγάλο ρόλο σε αυτό.
Ναι, νομίζω ότι περνάμε σε μια καινούργια εποχή όσον αφορά, όπως και είναι φανερό ακριβώς οι εποχές αστάθειας προκειμένου να σταθεροποιηθούν παράγουν και καινούργιες συνθήκες, απαιτήσεις. Μερικές φορές μας είναι δύσκολο και εμείς να συμβαδίσουμε με αυτό, έτσι να το πω για αυτό. Όλοι μας, δεν ξέρω κανέναν. Η προσπάθεια γίνεται. Να πω ότι εμείς στο Προξενείο έχουμε αναδιοργανώσει αρκετά θέματα. Έχουμε καινούργιο τηλεφωνικό κέντρο, έχουμε πάρει κάποιους καινούργιους ανθρώπους, κάνουμε την προσπάθειά μας να έχουμε όσο γίνεται καλύτερους χρόνους ανταπόκρισης, να απαντάμε. Το τέλειο είναι ο εχθρός του καλύτερου, αλλά η προσπάθεια γίνεται. Θέλω να πιστεύω ότι το βλέπουν αυτό, την προσπάθεια που γίνεται και για εξωστρέφεια του προξενείου, αλλά και για βελτίωση των υπηρεσιών. Προφανώς και λάθη θα γίνουν και δεν θα μπορέσουμε πάντα να ανταποκριθούμε όπως πρέπει ενδεχομένως. Είμαι εδώ για να αναλάβω αυτή την ευθύνη, αλλά θέλω να ξέρουν όλοι ότι η προσπάθεια γίνεται με κάθε καλή διάθεση. Αυτό μπορώ να το εγγυηθώ και για την ομάδα που έχουμε στο Προξενείο, γιατί είναι μια ομάδα ανθρώπων. Θέλω να πω ότι έχω ένα θετικό feedback από αρκετό κόσμο, ότι αναγνωρίζεται δηλαδή αυτό και η εξωστρέφεια του Προξενείου, αλλά και η προσπάθεια που κάνουμε να βελτιωθεί η ανταπόκριση, το σέρις κλπ. Επαναλαμβάνω, συνεχίζεται. Προφανώς δεν έχουμε καλύψει όλο το δρόμο, δεν υπάρχει αφόλεια, αλλά θέλω να πιστεύω ότι με την ομάδα που υπάρχει αυτή τη στιγμή στο Προξενείο, αλλά και με την προσπάθεια αλωνών μας, αυτό θα βελτιώνεται κάθε μέρα. Αυτό. Γιατί ακριβώς δεν είναι μόνο οι προξενικές υπηρεσίες, ναι, που είναι και, ας το πούμε, οι πιο δυσάρεστες εντός εισαγωγικών, με την έννοια είναι η γραφειοκρατία, είναι όλο αυτό. Αλλά είναι και η ευρύτερη η εικόνα που θέλουμε εμείς να υπάρχει της Ελλάδας εδώ στο μέλλον. Είναι ακόμα πιο θετική αυτό. Η εμπειρία δηλαδή να είναι ακόμα πιο θετική. Γίνονται προσπάθεια ψηφιοποίησης, γίνονται προσπάθεια αλλαγές. Σίγουρα θέλει χρόνο, αυτό το δέχομαι, αλλά θεωρώ ότι πάμε προς τη σωστή κατεύθυνση, να το πω.
No, definitely making the steps in the correct direction. No, no doubt. You know, I've seen it. You know, it's been happening for 10 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically,
yeah.
As you said, you know what I mean.
Totally agree.
We hit our rock bottom 10 years ago, and if you recover, I remember with Stamati when he was more active, and we would say, you know, basically, you know, another tough day, another tough day, another tough day, and you know. The statements back then from so many was, you know, you have to hit rock bottom first before you start climbing. Mm-hmm. And we did that, and we are climbing. I'm a little bit curious. You'd mentioned I'm asking in English so I can get the question out correctly, and you can answer in both languages. You mentioned that you had a meeting amongst your colleagues, you know, other consul generals, other consuls in Boston. Are they experiencing, do you know, the same type of increase of demand for people?
That's very interesting. That's very interesting. You know, there are not many. Let me, first of all, and I think I need to make a distinction between the honorary consuls and the, I won't say the real ones, but I would say the career ones.
Let's say.
That have full capacity and full jurisdiction, which is not the same as the honorary. There are a lot of honorary consuls in Boston, but that they are not real diplomats. They are people from the society that are appointed by countries to represent them here, but they are not. There are only a handful of us, the French, the German, the Italian, the Portuguese, myself, the Spaniard. So there are a few consulates here that are like the real thing.
Full-fledged.
So among ourselves, especially the EU ones, we work quite close together. And it's interesting, now that you mention it, that they're all having the same issues. And I think they're experiencing it in even more, because the Italians, there are so many of them, more than us. And the same applies with the Germans. So all the European consuls we have, and not only in Boston, of course, but all over the United States, we're experiencing the exact same issue. I remember talking with the Irish people. There was a delegation here, and those delegations are coming to see how their consulate is working. So they visited me to ask me about the Irish colleague, and she was doing a good job. We talked in general about the situation here. They have the biggest community, as you know. Mm-hmm. And the conversation was around that, and they told me that wherever they went to the United States, they had the same exact problem. Great volume of much more work, and especially to the many people wanting to reconnect with their European roots to become again European citizens.
I almost to some extent think that's almost generational. I think that, and believe it or not, I think some of this you know, blood testing, what are you? What are you made up? You're 40% Greek, and then all of a sudden you discover you're some other nationality, so you start exploring. But I think that now, I know that my own kids, you know, and their circle of friends, as opposed to maybe another generation, seem to be a little bit more in tune with, you know, the group amongst the group. In other words, you know, identifying themselves as, in our case, Greek Americans, as, you know, the Di Lorenzos as the Italian Americans, the Fahys as the Irish Americans.
Yeah.
I think I see a little increase in that.
I think that that's one part of it, and you know, the consul can correct me if I'm wrong, but the other part, the big part of it here is that Greece is, you know, in the golden visa aspect.
Yeah.
The Greek passport is a European passport. It allows you a great deal of, you know, fluidity and movement within the European space.
That's
so
true.
I think it's not just an issue of, like, you know, just connecting, mm-hmm. you know, that, you know, the ancestry piece.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a big issue here, and I think that's where the whole idea of Greece as an investment location is, mm-hmm. that it becomes a gateway into Europe. So the issue of stability, mm-hmm. in one sense, is like, yes, let's invest in tourism, but the issue of stability allows you to open up in a wider sense. And that's what I was saying earlier about the diaspora. I think there has to be also a concerted effort to reconnect the diaspora, because from a diaspora perspective, we are sort of like a loss right now. Our structures that existed the last 80 years or the last 90 years no longer function in the way that they did, because people here are structured in a different way. So I think both things have to work at the same time. We have to look at Greece not just as the place that we go to the summer.
Yeah, destination summer.
That. That's the easy, that's a low-hanging fruit. Mm. You have to look at the higher end here. And at the higher end, you have something that's very valuable right now. You have access to a labor market that's sort of like, you know, it's, you know, what we're seeing happening at borders everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
If you can prove that you're Greek in some way or another and you have that ancestry, that Greek passport unlocks all kinds of gateways everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the kind of a thing we also have to, like, view in a completely different
manner. Now, actually, Manny's going to call us right at 11 o'clock in a question, but this is a subject that I would like to discuss at further length on another broadcast in regards to, you know, citizens of Greece that perhaps would have an opportunity to come here or to Australia outside and bring the talents here if they chose to.
No, we want them to stay in Greece.
You want them to stay there. You don't want any
let them be.
Yeah, but we could use some of them.
It's exactly the opposite we want to achieve. We want to bring the Greeks back to Greece. We don't want them to go, quite the contrary. Our main efforts, and yesterday we had an event with Hellenic Innovation Network,
mm-hmm.
a great event, Greek startups pitching to investors here, but they need to have their employees, and that's the case all the time, mainly in Greece.
What about
we need them to stay in Greece, because we need to build the new Greece. We need to build a new Greece based on exactly the new economy, entrepreneurship, new ideas, and I think that's the that's a demand from all over the society. There are differences on the tools or the way you're going to do it.
Is Greece experience any brain gain from other, you know, citizens across the world as well?
I'm not in a position to, I mean, I don't have the data to answer to that. That's the truth.
But
I believe right now our branding, if I can say,
yeah.
if I can use the term, is going really, really much better. And let's talk numbers. Greece has made the biggest public debt reduction in the known history of the world. I mean, we cannot underestimate that. It's not like, again, it's not given. It's not something to not pay attention to. I'm not saying this is the only recipe or that's the most important thing, but when you are favoring the conditions, you're creating the condition to favor investment, that's what you need in order to move ahead. If you have a stronger economy, you have a stronger, you have stability, you have a stronger society, everything is better. That's the only way forward in this sense. So no, we want the Greek talents to stay in Greece, and we have to create the conditions in order to stay. Because if you don't create the conditions, they simply will go.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you need to increase the GDP. That's where you. That's how you lower.
Exactly.
That's how you lower your debt ratio. Mm-hmm. That's without a doubt. But I think it's also like, you know, to your point earlier, as far as having the wider conversation. Just look at what the income is for the United States for the EB-5 visas, mm-hmm. right? The money that flows into the United States is in the billions of dollars every year on those EB-5 visas, and those are investment visas. Those are visas that are given to people that, you know, are making a contribution to the U.S. economy. Mm-hmm. Greece is experiencing some of that right now. I mean, like on the Chinese funds and the Arab, you know, world funds and mm-hmm. places from Iran, from whatever people, Russia, mm-hmm. whatever people are having money and they want to park their money somewhere safe, they come in and they make an investment there. The thing is, how do you use that, leverage that? That's what I was saying about the tourism, or leverage that golden visa idea and expand your economy to a wider scope, which allows you the fluidity of not just brain drain, but also brain gain. You know, that's, I think that's the thing that you want. And that's the thing that Greece has the greatest upshot in.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, we're going to just take a little break with Manny Frangidakis and Stamatis Sasa, a little market update. We do that every Tuesday. And let me welcome them both on the air. Manny and Stamati, Kalimera. I'm actually in studio live with not only Professor Petro Vambaka, but our Consul General Simeon Tegos. So, gentlemen, Kalimera sas.
Kalimera.
Kalimera, Kalimera, Manny. How are you?
Kalimera, Stamati. I was just talking about the event yesterday at Fidelity, and also Kalimera, Manny. Great to hear from you again.
Καλημέρα κύριε Πρόξενε. Ευχαριστούμε που ήσασταν χθες μαζί μας και πάντα μας βοηθάτε σε αυτές τις καταστάσεις να δείχνουμε και την καινούργια Ελλάδα, τα νέα παιδιά που δημιουργούν στην Ελλάδα και σε όλο τον κόσμο εδώ στην Αμερική. Ευχαριστούμε.
Αλλημόνο, εμείς ευχαριστούμε για όλα όσα, για όλα όσα κάνατε στα μάτια.
Good morning, Manny.
Manny, I'll pass it the baton right to you because there is a party going on.
I'm not sure if we have Manny on the line. Manny?
Manny?
I don't think we have him on the line.
Yeah, Manny, are you here? Manny?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, there we go. Hello?
He was waiting for Belichick at the airport.
Kalimera, Manny.
Kalimera, Manny.
Kalimera, Kalimera.
I was saying, Manny, there is we'll pass the baton, right, the microphone right to you because there's a party going on. 2% up, everything. Okay, let's roll into 20s.
Yeah. So, I mean, you had a, you know, pretty robust CPI report this morning that showed that inflation is somewhat ticking down and less sticky than it was last month. In particular, it wasn't a massive move, but year over year, you saw the core of the CPI go from 4.1 to 4%. You know, so that kind of confirms to the market that the Fed is doing its job. You've had a somewhat slowdown in the economy, but you're certainly not in recession at this point in time. And, you know, the market is now trying to say, hey, maybe we can get out of this without actually having a recession. So markets are celebrating, including the small caps, which are up double what the NASDAQ is. And it's the first time they've performed in quite some time, which is a very healthy sign because that means that the rally is broadening out. It's no longer just in those seven large cap names. You're starting to see participation across multiple indexes.
Okay. 10-year treasury yield, it looks like
dropping.
Below 4.
Yep. So yield down, bond prices up, which is what we've been saying too, is that the bond market is pretty attractive here because as soon as the market starts to sniff out that potentially you reverse course in terms of where the Fed funds rate is, mm-hmm. bonds will rip. Stocks should rip, but bonds will rip much higher than stocks will.
So all in all, a good today.
You know, Teddy always wants the good news, so this is very, very good news.
God knows we could use some, Manny.
Yeah, I know, buddy.
I know.
But yeah, look, this is a really good report. Your next one's going to be in December, so you're going to have you know, right alongside the December 13th Fed meeting, you're going to get CPI for the month of November. We are still of the belief that the Fed is done hiking rates. This number kind of confirms it. Now, they're going to tell you at the same time that they're not going to take one data point and amplify its meaning. So they will continue to monitor the reports. But this could be the end of your tightening campaign. And don't forget, with an election coming up next year, that means if the Federal Reserve is going to do anything next year as it relates to the federal funds rate, they're going to have to do it by September at the latest, because they will not intervene during an election unless something horrific happens, financial catastrophe, black swan event that can't be foreseen. Then, of course, they'll intervene. But that gives them, you know, a short runway in 2024 to potentially lower rates.
Well, I know there's a lot of people counting on it, particularly your generation. You know, I can't tell you how many, you know, endless people, especially your generation, you know, just, you know, mid, low 30s that are, you know, they're in a position to want to purchase a home. But, you know, these 7.5-8% rates are just, you know, prohibitive.
But that's the other thing that's happening right now. I mean, like, I don't know if the home ownership is part of the American dream any longer.
I have to think it is.
I don't know.
I want to think it is.
Seeing it in other places in the world, I mean, I don't know how we're any different than that. I mean, that's what we're seeing in Europe throughout. So I don't know if that's something that's even plausible for a lot of people at that generation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what Manny thinks about
that. Well, that's early in the game, too. I mean, you know, you're 30 years old. You've got another, you know.
What I'm saying is, like, you know, you're looking at Switzerland, you're looking at Germany. Germany passed a legislation a couple of years ago, a referendum, Berlin. Like, 95% of the homes or condos in Berlin are, like, you know, rental units.
Uh-huh.
So you're talking about, you know, really high on the rental area, on rents. Yeah. Housing is an issue across the board.
Yeah.
Everywhere you're seeing in the Northern Hemisphere right now, housing is a huge issue.
Yeah, I'm curious because we have the Consul General here. Do we have any kind of a housing issue in Greece going on right now? Or is there...
Yeah, look, I'm not an expert, but from what I was reading on the press, the situation is equally difficult, especially in the big urban center like Athens, Thessaloniki.
Uh-huh.
It's really difficult.
And the rents are up, the Nikia?
Yeah, a lot. I mean, definitely. Pro ratio, let's say. There is a proportionality, of course.
Mm-hmm.
The starting point was much lower, but the impact, let's say, it's exactly, I think,
it's the same thing.
Yeah.
The golden visas, Airbnbs, you know.
Yeah.
All those things are, like, you know, having an effect on the rental markets everywhere. Like in Greece right now, it's disproportionately high in places like in urban areas.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you get like an urban area like Piraeus, for instance, and you have like, you know, 4,000. Euro per square meter in PDS, and it's like it's pretty like incredible to even contemplate that kind of a price.
That kind of a price, yeah. It's Manhattan prices. It's crazy.
Yes, it's happening. I think, as Pedro said, it is not a unique phenomenon. I think it's you know, some people say it's related with COVID. Some others say it's some kind of bouncing back from the previous period, that the prices were not exactly, because people keep wondering who can pay this rent, right? Even here, I hear that a lot in Boston, and since we have money on the line, I was wondering. I mean, have you been hearing about that? Like, life became so expensive, so difficult, especially housing. I think there is a clear housing. I've been reading the Boston Globe every once in a while, an article about that. So, Manny, have you been hearing that a lot?
Yeah, and actually, we just did our own analysis, and it's, you know, your timing is perfect. So as much as we're celebrating a lower CPI this morning, there's three things that every single human buys on any given day, right? Shelter, energy, and food. Now, if you strip the CPI and just focus on those three items, and if you took the last 3 months of those reports and annualized them, they're running at 6.1%. That's significantly higher than the 2% target. So my other shoe to drop, as it relates to, you know, where the market is and how the Fed can potentially maneuver this situation, is that this last mile of inflation will be the hardest part to conquer.
Mm-hmm.
So you might end up with inflation hovering around 3.5% for quite some time, which won't allow the Fed to remove that much of the federal funds rate. So if you do get cuts next year, I'm expecting maybe at a max 100 to 150 basis points. So that'll take your Fed funds rate down from 5.4%. You know, to somewhere around 4 and change, with inflation hovering around 3.5. They'll do that slowly.
Mm-hmm.
but that is exactly what probably will take place, is that you're going to live in a 4 to 4.5% neutral rate, with inflation hovering around 3 to 3.5, with that extra mile taking a little bit longer to conquer.
Do you see any tangible solution on the horizon? Sorry to interrupt you, but do you see any tangible solution on the horizon? This is, I guess, the broader problem, right?
So. I think the broader problem is then you look at the governments, right? And then you look at where the fiscal deficits are. Mm. You know, the Treasury does a report every year that is signed by Janet Yellen. It reads like an annual report, where we just pulled up 2022's version. You know, and you're running at a deficit right now of 90% of GDP. If you do nothing, they're projecting out 75 years in advance that you're going to be running at a deficit of 560% of GDP. So you're almost kind of stuck in this cyclical higher inflation cycle for the next coming years and decades, just due to where the federal deficits are.
Yeah.
And they're going to end up having to kind of monetize or inflate their way out of it in the long run, because it's a way to address the problem without actually addressing the problem. Because then your other two sections are, you know, you either cut entitlements, which they're not willing to do, or you raise taxes, which they're not willing to do. Yeah. So it does get a little tricky in the longer run on fighting cyclical inflation, and housing will be a huge component of that.
So that you're moving to a completely different economic structuring than what we've known. I mean, when you're seeing the signs everywhere, whether it's labor, whether it's movement, whether it's all this stuff, you know, you're seeing it everywhere. So that's what I was saying earlier about even like, you know, moving away from the whole home ownership, the private ownership idea. Everything becomes like a rental kind of a thing that you use, and then you just move on, regardless of what that consumption good is.
Yeah, but, you know, in a sense with that, excuse me, I mean, you know, the rich getting richer, though, in that case.
Well,
but that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, we've gone back 100 years.
That's why you're even talking about this wealth inequality gap getting exponentially worse over the next 10 years.
Have you gone to go out to buy a new phone? A new iPhone is like $2,000. So you just rent it for the 2 years that you're going to use it, and then get the new one that you rent again. The same thing is happening with the auto industry and leasing. That's the same thing that's happening with rental, with everything, with education, with healthcare. Everything becomes sort of like a good that you sort of like use and you pay over time. So it's that kind of a utility that you have, and you calculate that as far as the function that, you know, of your use. So.
Yeah. So, but yeah, that's the ticking time bomb that's out there, and the bond market's telling you that, because if you look at the auctions, the 10-year auction goes off without a hiccup, because people are willing to take that bet for the next 10 years. You look at the 30-year auction, it's atrocious. No one's willing to come in and, you know, buy that debt for that long period of time, because there's way too much uncertainty.
Yeah.
You know, and this problem that's happening in Washington will eventually come and bite us in the butt at some point. And that's what, you know, that is the thing that you cannot foresee, because when that does happen, and you know, you go to do a treasury auction and no one shows up to bid, well, that's the day that you have a 1987 type event and you wake up and markets are down 30%. You know, and that's the world that you can't even be involved in fixed income for that period of time, because if the treasury doesn't price correctly, then you can't price any bond out there correctly, and you have a massive divergence from net asset values.
There's a whole new industry called, you know, you buy now, you pay later, and that's you just calculate the future income of the young generation, and that's what you do, and it's a new way of looking at things and leveraging your future earnings in for your lifetime value.
Yeah. It's a consumption function.
Yeah. Today's been a really great session, gentlemen. Manny.
One last question for Manny. Friday is a special day in the Capitol Hill. Do you expect a deal? Or
Look, I think that they probably get some kind of patchwork deal, like put a Band-Aid on the wound. But I don't see anything that, you know, is rosy in Washington right now that says we have leadership in place that's going to take us to the next stage. I think it's another patch-up job just to keep things humming along and, you know, punt the can to, you know, another problem down the road.
Well, I've predicted on the air that neither Biden nor Trump will be candidates next year.
So. Yeah, yeah.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I mean, Did you see the endorsement of, there was some kind of report regarding Nikki Haley this morning?
Yeah.
That attached Jamie Dimon to it?
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. Interesting. Interesting.
I mean, and then you saw Tim Scott drop out. So I think, you know, Chris Christie now is in Israel, kind of like a Hail Mary pass, like to shore up his foreign policy credentials. I think that's gonna thin out soon. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, can't thank you enough.
I think you're going to see the left come up and Gavin Newsom then end up being your Democratic nominee.
Could be.
That's what's shaping up to be right now.
Or Ted's friend, Amy Klobuchar.
Amy Klobuchar. Had an opportunity to meet her a few years back, no doubt. Gentlemen, very, very good. And thank you also, Consul General, for your contributions. There you go, Manny. We brought you little extra superstar here today, so how's that for you?
I love it.
He's talking about Van Vakas.
No, not the superstar here.
Yeah, that's it. Manny Frangidakis, Stamatis Sastra, join us 11 o'clock on Tuesdays weekly. Great discussion on our markets. We'll be right back. A little closing comments. I know that Petra has to go, but stick with us. We'll be right back after this quick song.